We heard Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin said Saturday that Republicans were set to roll out the next COVID-19 aid package today and assured that there was backing from the White House after he and President Trump, his top aide, met to salvage the $1 trillion proposal that had floundered just days before. Mnuchin told reporters at the Capitol that extending an expiring unemployment benefit but reducing it substantially was a top priority for Trump. The secretary called the $600 weekly aid ridiculous and a disincentive for people to go back to work. He also promised a fresh round of $1,200 stimulus checks would be coming in August. To discuss this more, we're going to bring in our next guest, who is the assistant business professor over at the University of New Haven. We've actually had this gentleman on the show before. His name is Patrick Gourley. Patrick, good morning.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm actually calling from Billings, Montana this morning.
Really? Very.
Yeah, I've been, fiance and I have been doing a road trip around, spent a few weeks in Yellowstone, Tetons, backpacking, camping, and it's been interesting to see kind of the different responses town to town, to the COVID pandemic.
Very. Wow. Look at you. You're a busy guy, huh?
Yeah, summer's off for professors, don't have to teach, so decided to take a break from the research and, like I said, try and do a safe vacation. Safe to say we social distance when we're 10 miles in the backcountry and haven't seen anybody for 2 days.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's got to be tough. Just reading some of this regarding the, not only the expired $600 weekly aid, I guess it's a supplemental check from the feds in conjunction with your local or state unemployment, but there's also a $1,200, yet another $1,200 stimulus check that's supposed to be starting coming in August. Well, so a couple of things come to mind. We can start with the $1,200 stimulus check. Now, that still needs to be compromised, right? I know one is it the I'm trying to think one the Senate I think wants to $1 trillion and then the House wants something like $3 trillion and very similar to the last time the $1,200. Was being offered to everybody, but there's a different criteria this time around, isn't there?
I'm not sure on how it's going to shake out with who gets it and who doesn't. It's more from the economics perspective. The $1,200 lump sum payment has a lot less potential to distort labor markets than the $600 additional per week.
All right, so let's go there. By my opinion, I mean, that $600 weekly aid was, it came at the right time, but there's a lot of people that are back to work. What does something like this do in as far as our economy is concerned? Does it disincentivize or, like, will you see people that can go back to work and just sit there and say, well, I could, but I'm making less going back to work, where, geez, if I stay home and take this extra weekly aid from the feds combined with my state, my unemployment, I might as well just stay home. I would imagine it has a lot to do with the economy, right?
Yeah, the $600 a week is really interesting because you have the situation for the first time in America where you can make more money being unemployed than if you're employed. Usually the goal of unemployment is to kind of find that happy balance where you're giving people enough that they're getting by, they can pay their rent, they have enough money for food and maybe a few basic, luxury items, but you don't give them so much that they don't want to find work. And so it's very unusual to have a situation where you would actually lose money by going back to work.
Yeah, exactly. So people are really having to weigh whether or not, I can't blame them. They're going to look out for themselves, right? They're going to look out and say, why should I go back to work when I'm making $250 a week more simply by staying home and collecting both from the state and from the feds?
And the bigger change, too, that's happened in the last 15 years with the ACA, with Obamacare, is that previously you would think also, oh, people want to go back to work to get health insurance. Well, a lot of workers that are going to be making more with the $600 a week are those minimum wage employees, those workers that might have health insurance now not through their employer, could have gotten it through one of the state healthcare exchanges or the federal healthcare exchange. So that was one of the other reasons where you would go back to work to get health insurance. And so I think for some individuals, there's, I mean, as you said, why would you?
Yeah, exactly. We're talking with Patrick Gorley. He's the assistant business professor down at the University of New Haven. What does this do to our deficit? I would imagine. I mean, we're already at $26 trillion. This has the potential to increase that. Holy smokes. What does that do, though, when you look at the big picture? How does that affect our economy?
Yeah, the deficit is, you know, it's definitely something that gets tossed around a lot. The number, $26 trillion, is unfathomably large. But so far, it doesn't seem to be a big drag on the American economy, in large part because interest rates are so low. Okay. The U.S. government, if you buy Treasury bonds from the U.S. government, the amount of interest they're paying you is such a small percent that I'm not really concerned about that. My much bigger concern is, are you going to have individuals who decide not to work? That's going to be have a larger negative impact on the U.S. economy than the deficit.
Well, if they choose not to work, it's still only temporary. I mean, eventually it will expire. I mean, you got to look at down the road. I mean, you could be, if you choose not to go back to work that is available to you right now, and you want to roll the dice, and collect that money. But who's to say that by January or whenever this expires, that there'll be a job still there waiting for you? Why would you even want to gamble with your future?
Yeah, I mean, that's the sensible and long-term thing to do. But at the same time, if you're looking at that $600 coming every week, it's easy to say, well, I have these skills, I'll just find a job in January. Well, the reality is employers look at those gaps in employment, and if you haven't been working since March, that's going to get harder and harder than to find a new job. It's just whether or not people are looking that long term.
I can't believe that somebody would actually want to do, I mean, I know there's all walks of life and all schools of thought, but there's no guarantee of a job down the road. Why not take advantage of it right now while if there's still one being made available to you?
Yeah, again, I just think it's easy to say that for some people, but I don't know if you do. I know people who personally have said, yeah, I could probably find a job now, but I'm much happier taking they'd be taking a pay cut by going back to work, and so they've decided to stay out of work for the time being.
So they jeopardize not having a job to go back to at all. I just can't see this devalues the dollar overall, though, doesn't it?
In terms of international exchange rates?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's not going to have as big of an impact. Again, because this pandemic is worldwide, the U.S. dollar, I think, is going to do fairly well. People are not going to be rushing to put their money in a lot of other economies, just because the U.S. economy is still one of the strongest in the world. We still have so many different businesses. I don't see a weakening of the dollar that's going to be in a large magnitude.
Do we have any data regarding what people are using this money for? And let me give you an example of what I mean. It's a stimulus. This extra $600, I'm talking regarding now this extra $600, should it get extended, and it looks like it very well may, are people actually using it for that purpose, or are they paying bills, or do we even have people just saying, I'm going to bank it, and therefore it really defeats the purpose that it was originally intended for?
So there is some survey data out there. Obviously, survey data is just relying on what people say they're doing, so there's always a gap between survey and reality. But it does look like people are saving more and investing more than was originally anticipated, which isn't the worst thing to have people saving money, especially if the $600 a week stops. It's been interesting. I know some online brokerages have actually seen record activity, and so some people looks like they're putting it into the stock market, which has its own risks, but does partially explain why the stock market is doing so well despite this record high unemployment.
So many people would argue, though, that it's just socialism. It's taking government money, right, that you didn't really earn, other than you're just sitting on your many people are just sitting on their butt. And by the way, I don't want to stereotype anybody or paint everybody with the same stroke of the brush. I mean, there are people who are genuinely in need and have been laid off or furloughed and have to make ends meet and so on and so forth. And that's fine and dandy, because that's the purpose of this. But it's a whole other story, and in fact a whole other ball game, when there's able-bodied people who are offered their position back, and just decline it for the purposes that we're talking about here. I mean, I don't want people to get confused here and think that I'm lumping everybody in the same group.
Whoop. And again, it's just a balancing act. It is really tough. I think the great phrase has been coined lockdown socialism, which is kind of what we have with this idea that the government's pumping so much money in the economy while saying, but you can't do this long list of things for safety reasons. It's just, you know, in March and April, I think most people understood, hey, some people are unemployed. They're actually making more money. These are extreme times. We don't know what's going to happen. And people kind of, everybody said, we need to chip in. And as long as that mentality is there, I think it can work. But we're definitely going to start shifting now. But, okay, we have a much better idea of what's going on as far as the virus. We have mechanisms we can take where the economy can be both open and safe, you know, with the social distancing and wearing the face masks and everything. And so it's just about, well, how do we want to phase this out to make sure that people who can't find work aren't going to lose their homes, aren't going to not be able to afford food, but also everybody wants to work.
Well, then to that point, maybe not everybody should receive that $1,200 stimulus. I heard that they were going to change the criteria where once, when do we get that? Like, I think they initially issued the first back in April. And if you made, what is it, $99,000 or less, you received the $1,200. And if you, I guess if you had a combined income of, like, I forget. I don't have the details in front of me. I'm just going by memory. But I think they were going to lower that. I can't imagine. There are people who are just more worthy than others, and others are less worthy. I can't imagine this really being good for the economy. That's the crux of what I'm trying to convey here.
Yeah, the other big issue, too, is there's been talk about, hey, let's look at the $600 a week and make sure nobody's making more money than they were previously. And just unfortunately, our state unemployment systems aren't set up to be able to do that. And they're run on these really old computers with kind of ancient software. And states just don't really have the ability to figure out on an individual basis how much money were you making before the pandemic. How do we limit you to the ceiling and mail out a different check to every single individual? But it'd be nice if we could kind of get that together, because then we could have a better balance.
Is that how you would do it? You've got a lot of experience as assistant business professor over there at University of New Haven. What in your opinion and by your experiences, what is the best approach to this? What is fair? What is the fair thing to do, or the balanced thing to do, to help those who are genuinely in need and yet not incentivize those who are not in need, but yet, you know, ripping off the system, so to speak?
Yeah, I definitely think you need to have a ceiling of under 100% of your pre-pandemic wages. Call it maybe 90%, so that everyone has an objective dollar and cents incentive to get back to having a job. I think 90% is a good amount, because then very few people won't be able to get by. I think, you know, there aren't a lot of people who are kind of living that hand to mouth. There are definitely some, and so those would be the people who still lose out. But I think a 90% of your pre-pandemic income would be a good ceiling.
Hmm. Interesting. The kids that you're teaching down at University of New Haven, is there a disparity, I guess, between what kids nowadays think and maybe what some others think?
In terms of what?
In terms of the stimulus and not only the stimulus checks, but also the Fed check weekly of $600.
Yeah, I mean, so the University of New Haven, we have a very, we have a large variety of students, and so we have some students that are incredibly wealthy, and so I'm sure, and some students that are generally lean very far right, and so there's definitely been talk in the spring where some students were very concerned about this and said, hey, this is, again, disincentivizing people to go back to work. And then, like any college, we have extremely liberal students, and it's been actually very rewarding for me at the University of New Haven. We have a large amount of first-generation college students and from historically disadvantaged groups, and I think that I'm sure that a lot of my students have been helped greatly, and it's really helped their families kind of keep afloat. Obviously, we usually don't go into this on an individual basis, but I will say that, by and large, a lot of our students want to go back to campus in the fall, and nobody really enjoyed teaching or learning online as much as they did being in person, which has been interesting as every college debates, do we go back? How do we handle social distancing? It seemed like across the board, our students wanted to be back on campus.
You know, that's pretty interesting that you say, and I just to kind of deviate just for a final minute here, you must notice a difference as an assistant professor in business there, that how you go about teaching online as opposed to teaching, you know, in a classroom type setting. If you don't mind, can you just differentiate that for us in about a minute, or and let me know really quickly, what do you consider the better option?
Yeah, it's been enormously difficult. I mean, it's you can't just stare at a laptop screen for hours and hours every day, even in a course like economics where it's not hands-on. I can teach everything through a screen. I mean, a biology lab, obviously you can't do it all through Zoom. But so it has been very challenging. I think the amount that students are learning has gone down. It's also nearly impossible to keep students or make sure that students are being academically honest with tests. There's no way for me to even know for sure who's taking the exam, let alone.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. Let alone if they have some other screen up and they're going online and searching question banks. There's been some attempts in some software where, you know, we're going to track the students and have them look at the screen and look where their eyes are going. But that has its own issues because a lot of our, you know, some of our students don't necessarily have a stable internet connection or can't always have a webcam up or don't feel comfortable. And I don't blame them for not wanting the ability for someone to look into their living room or bedroom, wherever they're zooming in from at all times. And so it has been difficult.
I can imagine. Hey, I can't thank you enough for being with us this morning, Patrick Gourley. We look forward to the next time and keep up the great work.
All right. Thanks a lot.